Patram karane vishnu yama devaha Patram pashe makshabhir yachatraha Stirai rangai istushtuvagum sastanubihi Yashema devahitam yadayuhu Swastina indro vrittashravaha Swastina pusha vishwavedaha Swastina starakshu arishtanemihi Swastino Brahaspatir Tathatu. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. So we're on verse 9 in the last section. Sayoha Vaitat Paramam Brahma Veda. Sayoha Vaitat Paramam Brahma Veda. Brahmaiva Bhavati Nasya Brahmavitkule Bhavati. Brahmaiva bhavati nasya brahmavit kule bhavati tarati shokam tarati papmanam tarati shokam tarati papmanam guha granti bhyo vimukto amrito bhavati guha granti bhyo vimukto amrito bhavati. That's a sandhi. Saha yaha Havai tat paramam brahma veda. Brahma eva bhavati na asya abrahmavit kule bhavati tarati shokam tarati patmanam guha granti bhyaha vimuktaha amrito bhavati. These last verses are really summing up what is the nature of, what is the experience of the jivanmukta, the one who is liberated while living, the one who has gained this knowledge. What is the criterion for such a person? What happens to such a person? And so it's really, these last verses are dealing with what we call the phala, jnana phala, the fruit. Phala means fruit. What is the fruit of knowledge? What happens to a person when they gain knowledge? So these last verses, the verses that come before, and these last three verses are really summarizing all of this to bring the Upanishad to a close. So in this verse he says, Saha yaha, saha hi yahahu, saha yaha, hi hu havai. Havai are two particles that are in this case talking about definitely with clarity. Tat paramam brahma veda. He who knows, clearly knows with definiteness. Havai. Okay? So the one who veda knows clearly. Clearly what? Tat paramam brahma. That brahman which is supreme. Paramam sometimes translates as supreme, but it really means that Brahman which is limitless, infinite, that which is beyond time and space, not limited by time, space, or quality, that's Paramam. There's nothing that is more than that, greater than that. That is that which is absolutely infinite. So the one who knows clearly, without vagueness and without doubt, that Brahman, that self which is infinite, because Brahman means the whole Mahavakya and in the Vedanta, in the Upanishad, is Tattvamasi, you are that. Right? Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. I, this Atma, this conscious being, this me, the self that is here, the self of the jiva, of the individual that we were focusing on in the meditation, where you're just sitting with your own presence, the conscious being that is there, the invariable conscious being that is there, present to all of the thoughts in your mind, all of your moods, all of your emotions, the one for whom all of those things are, right? The you, the self that is there, that Atma is Brahman. That very self that the jiva, the individual, takes to be this body, mind, sense organs because of superimposition. That self has been superimposed on all of this changing phenomena to make you take yourself, your own presence, to be a limited entity, subject to death, subject to change, subject to ups and downs, subject to samsara. If my mind is sad, I'm sad. If my mind is hateful, I'm hateful. If I'm agitated, I'm agitated. If I'm happy, oh, fine, I'm happy. So whatever the condition is, I take myself to be that. If I'm old, my body's old, I'm old. If my body's young, I'm young. This type of superimposition has caused that invariable, changeless presence of my being, the me, which is always there exactly the same, to be taken, to be identified with this changing phenomenon that I actually experience, that comes and goes in my presence. So the Upanishad, the whole purpose of the Upanishad is to reveal to you, to make you recognize that in fact your presence is changeless and invariable, and is not something that can be objectified as an object to be compared with other objects. And so in fact your presence is that Paramam Brahman, is your being, the me. When you say me, this very self that you're talking about is limitless in nature, limitless and changeless, absolutely whole. And so the mind has to now be guided to the recognition of that fact. It has to be, the mind has to be guided so that you can differentiate yourself from everything that you have misidentified it with. So now it says, the one who knows clearly, without doubt, means who's been exposed to this teaching. So Veda, the one who knows that Paramam Brahman, as it's been taught in the Upanishad, Brahmaiva Bhavati, that person becomes Brahman. The one who knows Brahman becomes Brahman. Because to know Brahman is to recognize Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. Aham means I. Aham, I, asmi, am Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. So in that recognition, I become what I have always been. What has stopped me from becoming Brahman, because there's no actual becoming, there's no change that is taking place, there's a removal of ignorance. That's why they say, the one who knows Brahman becomes Brahman. What that means is, I recognize the self that I had taken to be limited, the conscious being that I am, I had taken to be limited. I recognize that I, that this aham, this me that is here, this me is limitless and changeless. So the one who knows Brahman clearly, without doubt, that one becomes Brahman in the form of Aham Brahmasmi, recognizes I am Brahman. Okay? Now what it says is very interesting. So now, that person now is a Brahmavit, having recognized. Brahmavit, what means, vit means know. One who knows Brahman is a Brahmavit. Right? So now the Brahmavit, what about the Brahmavit? The one who knows I, Aham Brahmasmi, my being is limitless, I am non-dual, I am the self of the whole. The one who knows that, then, na asya abrahmavit kule bhavati. In the family, kula, there's going to be two ways to take this, we'll do it this way first. In the family of the Brahmavit, okay, in the kula of such a person, asya, Brahmavit, in the kula of such a person, there is no abrahmavit. In the family of the Brahmavit, there is no abrahmavit. What that means, abrahmavit means one who is not a Brahmavit. So say, for instance, if you are a Brahmavit, if you are somebody who knows Brahman, you have self-knowledge with clarity. Into your family, there will not be an abrahmavit. A child will be born. Say, we're just talking about family now. Who is going to be born into your family? Okay. What type of jivas will you attract? Right. So you're a married couple and you're both brahmavits. Okay. What type of jivas will be born into your family? But this is a praise. So they say, the jivas, the individuals that will take birth in your family, they will also become brahmavits. Right? Because they'll be, in order to be born, it takes a tremendous amount of punya to be born into the family of somebody who has knowledge. So they'll have the adhikaritvam, they'll have everything they need, they'll have all of the samskaras with them, so that when they're born into your family, then you will teach them and they will become brahmavits. It's a praise. It's interesting. This is part of the tradition. And what it makes me think of, and Swamiji talked about this in his Bhasha also, that in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was in the middle of the battle. Right before the battle was going to be fought, he became a mumukshu, one who decided, I need to know this, I need this knowledge now. You know, and in an hour we're going to be in battle, so I need to know this now.
Yeah.
Okay, so Krishna said, all right. And right in the middle of the battlefield, he taught him the whole Bhagavad Gita. But Arjuna, as he was receiving this knowledge from Krishna, and understanding it also, he had this doubt. He said, I don't know if when I'm in battle, if I'm going to be able to retain this. Will I be able to remember all of this that you're telling me? And what if I don't have nishta? What if I don't gain nishta? I don't gain little clarity in this knowledge. And I'm killed in the battle. I'm killed in battle before I've had had time to really understand myself, to know myself. You know? What will happen to me? What will happen to me? Will I have to start all over? In other words, I'll lose this body, and then I'll take another body based upon my karma and come back here again. But will I get a teacher? Will I get a teacher? Will I pick up where I left off? What is going to happen to me? You know? And so Krishna tells him, don't worry, it's okay, we'll be okay. What will happen? What will happen? It's because once in mumukshu, once you've crossed that line, you know, into that mumukshutvam, there's tremendous punya in that. But once you cross that line, then when you take another birth, he says, two things. You'll either be born into a dharmic family where you can exhaust some of your karmas, karmas that need to be exhausted, and then you'll be reunited with this knowledge. Or if you have nothing more to exhaust, you will be born into the house of a Brahmavid, yogis. And from there, right then and there, you'll be with your teachers who will then give you knowledge and you'll pick it up right away. And so a verse like this from the Upanishad could be a basis for what Krishna is referring to in that verse. Because now, if in the Kula, in the family of Brahmavids, if somebody's going to be born as into the family of Brahmavids, they also will become Brahmavids. Because they have the punya, the samskaras, to take such a birth. Why do you take the birth that you take? Why were you born to the given parents that you were born into, the family that you were born into, the time, the place, the situation? It's a combination of the punya, papa, your last life, to give you a continuity. This life is a continuity from your last life, and you're bringing in karmas from your sanchitta karma that are that relate somehow. Now, to make that more clear, if you just look at this life that you have, if you look at step by step by step the progression of your life, one situation leads to the next, leads to the next, leads to the next, leads to the next. Now, when you look back at maybe five steps back, you might not see that much of a connection unless you go back step by step by step by step, and then you'll see this led to this, and this led to this, and this led to this, this led to this, and this is how I am, why I'm here right now. Now, say if you extend that, not have it stop just at this, at the physical death of this body, but let your life continue, the life of the jiva continue. This led to this, this led to this, this led to this. You die, now you're in this situation. Who you are, what are you when you die? What is the combination of all of the karmas, all of the thoughts, everything that have led you to this moment of death when you drop this body? Okay, that's what propels you forward. And those of the karmas in your sanchitta file will be attracted to that person. You know, the person that when you leave this body, who is that person? You can't fake that, right? Because all of the will and everything is being left behind as you drop the physical body. And so who you actually are is, you know, what, and not in terms of Brahman, but as a soul, who you actually are is going to be the one that's moving on. Not somebody else, right? It's who you actually are. in India, though people are aware of this, they also want to try to influence it. You know, so what they'll do is when their loved one is on their deathbed, they'll try to influence and make who that person is, try to bring out the very best of that person so that when they die, they'll be thinking of the Lord or thinking of something that will bring them a great deal of punya. You know, and so often when the person is dying, they'll be chanting if the person's Ishtadevata or their Lord is, say, Rama or Krishna or whatever it is. They'll be saying a mantra, Rama, 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 into their ear. Rama, 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 Rama. So that when that soul dies, they'll have the Lord's name on their mind, right? To kind of give them a boost in the proper direction. Yeah, but that's what their thinking is for that. But say if you just think about it, what this verse is saying, that if you yourself are a Brahmavit, then what type of a jiva is going to be attracted into your family? Because their karmas would have to somehow have a relationship with who you are. Right? There has to be a connection. And so, who is going to want to be born? Not that it's a desire in terms of want, but who is going to be attracted to the house of a Brahmavit? Would be somebody that would be meaningful to. You know, just like, say there are Vedanta classes going on. Who would come to a Vedanta class? Not very many people. Only somebody who has an interest in it. Only somebody that for whom that there's some sort of a connection. That's the same in reference to where you find yourself located in life. So here, if you take this on that level, the person who's if a person is a Brahmavit, whoever is born into their family, they will get this knowledge because that person deserves it by the very fact that they've been born into that family. Deserves it means they're ready for it. The opposite of that would be you may be a Brahmavit and your child could be born into the family, but could care less. You know, like if you're a great tennis player, you're a champion tennis player, and then you have two or three children, you know, you have no idea whether they'll have any interest at all in playing tennis. Right? It's the same with everything. Say you're a musician, you know. You may be a wonderful musician, and your children are tone deaf. They have no such talent or interest. You know, so here, if you're a Brahmavit, your children, will they have interest? But they're trying to say it's a praise of this knowledge, right? That they're extolling the knowledge, and they're extolling the adhikari and the great punya. Adhikari means a qualified student. They're extolling the qualified student, you know? And they're extolling you as somebody who has this knowledge. You know, so that's one level that it can be taken on. Another level is that the kula is the family, and it can also be the gurukula. So the Brahmavit kula is the gurukula. The gurukula is the family of the teacher. Right? So every teacher has their students. Right? That's the in fact in the name of the ashram, you know, our ashram is Arsha Vidya Gurukula. In India, when you go to study with your teacher, you go to their Gurukula. You go and you live with the teacher, you study with the teacher. Right? So then you become part of the family of the teacher. You're part of the Guru's Kula, their family. And all of you become, all of us are Gurubhais. We're brothers and sisters, right? We're Gurubhais within the family of the teacher. Now, if the teacher is a Brahmavit, if the teacher knows the self, the teacher knows who they are, then the student will know who they are. Right? If a student comes to the teacher and the teacher is a Brahmavit, then the student will become a Brahmavit. Right? Because, again, what causes the student to come to the teacher? If the teacher is a Brahmavit, if the teacher is one who knows Brahman, why does the teacher come to the, why does the student come to the teacher? The student comes to know Brahman. Why on earth would the student want to know Brahman? Right? There has to be the some same thing. The samskaras have to be there. Right? There has to be the mumukshutvam. Samskaras means that tendency, that inclination. Why is that inclination there? In the traditions of punya, it's grace. It's deserved grace, you know. And so your mind is ready to gain this knowledge. And if your mind is ready to gain this knowledge to the extent that will bring you to the teaching, and the Brahmavit, the teacher is a Brahmavit, then there's no way not to gain the knowledge. Because yourself is here, the self is here, which is Brahman, the teaching methodology, the pramana, is here. Right? So why wouldn't you know? If the student is an adhikari, enough to sit in front of the teacher, and the tradition of the teaching methodology is there, and the teacher is a Brahmavit, then the student must know. Right? If there's obstructions to the mind and this type of things, those things have to be dealt with. That also comes along with this teaching. So, well, I may know myself, but my mind doesn't act like it. I know the truth. I know what it is. I know myself. But my mind doesn't act like it. Right? Well, that's right. You know yourself, and your mind doesn't act like it until your mind has had a chance to catch up. You know, your samskaras, your tendencies have had a chance to catch up. But there comes a time when you can say, I know myself, you know, and my mind has this and that problem, and I'm helping it along. Right? Then you know. And because my mind has this and that problem, or has this, gets upset, I don't enjoy my knowledge as much as I could. But that's all right. See what I'm saying? The knowledge itself has to take care of your mind and the maturing process of your mind. But that doesn't mean that you don't know yourself. It means that your mind has to grow and catch up, that your mind has some bad habits. Bad habits means has some scars, it has traumas that it's grown up with and whatnot, it has baggage that it's carrying, it has lack of vairagya here or there, I need this to be happy, I need that, even though you know you don't. It still behaves in all of these ways. And so you learn how to take care of that mind as it goes through its maturing process. All along that whole drama taking place in the constancy of yourself. If the whole drama is taking place in the constancy of yourself and you are known to yourself, you have knowledge. And then you would say, I have knowledge and my mind is maturing. And you would say, I have knowledge. I know who I am. And you know, my mind this year is much better than last year. This month, you know, if you start looking back, you say, oh, there is a beautiful growth process going on. And after a time, that growth process of owning up your knowledge is enough that you're really enjoying your knowledge and enjoying your mind, so that you can then really appreciate that maturing process, you know. But all the while knowing what's going on and letting the mind relax into the constancy of your being, which is you. What makes you a jnani, one who has self-knowledge, is when your identity, your self-identity, is with the self that's not changing. And that, when the ahankara, the I notion, is planted in you, then whatever is going on in the world, whatever is going on in your mind, whatever is going on anywhere, is going on and needs to be tended and dealt with in a way that you develop skills to do. You, just like you develop skills to handle the world and handle your job and handle your relationships and all of these, you develop skill, you learn how to do these things. You also learn how to handle your own mind and handle your own maturing process. And you do that out of love and care, you know. It's interesting. Somebody asked me today, and I was at the... one student asked me today, it was a good question. She said, I was at a retreat that we did for our school today. One student asked me, do you, knowing that I teach Vedanta and that this is kind of my spiritual commitment and whatever, she said, do you ever feel disappointed in yourself? Disappointed, you know? And the idea was, you know, if you're not quite living up to your expectations of, do you have this knowledge and everything, that, you know, do you ever feel disappointed in yourself? Do you not, kind of behaving like you wish that you would behave? And I thought, oh, that's an interesting question. I said, I don't think about it like that. You know, I don't think about it like that. It's not a matter of being disappointed in yourself. It's a matter of helping yourself. Now, think about it. If you had a child, the difference between being disappointed in your child because they're not quite up to par in their behavior, or wanting to help your child, it's a huge difference in attitude. Right? It makes all the difference. And so say I make a mistake, or, you know, I'm doing something that I want to change, then I would want to help myself to change and be like a mentor to myself. Because then what means, if you could be disappointed in yourself, what that means is that you have a value system. You have a certain value for being in a particular way, or your knowledge you have a particular knowledge, and there's a part of yourself that's not living up to that knowledge, right? Or there's a part of yourself, your mind, that's not living up to that value, whatever it is. So now, how are you going to be toward that part that's not living up to your value or not living up to your knowledge? Are you going to be disappointed? Are you going to be judgmental? Are you going to be critical? That's not going to be very helpful. Right? It makes you hurt, as opposed to being interested and being helpful, you know, and trying to help tackle the problem, whatever it is. That makes all the difference. So there's nobody disappointed. There's somebody who's wanting to help, you know. And if you have that attitude toward yourself and toward others, it's you have a safe inner environment. Disappointment is not part of the picture. And I think that the question made me also think, you know, when you're with your teacher, like I think of the years I spent with Swamiji, we saw the thing today, all the years I spent with my teacher, he would never be disappointed in me. I couldn't even imagine it. That wouldn't be there. He would be interested and then trying to help me overcome whatever the problem is. It's not about disappointment. It's about helping. And so I was just realizing, you know, what a role model that is. What a role model. You know, to have a teacher who I don't think he would ever be disappointed in himself either. He just deals with the problem, trying to solve the problem. And that gives such a beautiful inner space, if you can give that to yourself. And there's no reason not to. It's simply education. Problem is that most of us have, whatever our parents have done their best, and it's never good enough. Poor parents. Yeah. Situation is never perfect, you know, and so we've been criticized or yelled at or this or that in this way or that way, and we've picked up certain complexes that you don't even realize. These things have to be turned around, and sometimes having a teacher, it becomes a role model for you to interject that new way of behaving toward yourself. that gives you some shanti, some peace. But all of that is part of this teaching, you know. And so for the Brahmavid, we'll get into this a little bit more, he's going to go into this now. The Brahmavid, the understanding is much more than it's much deeper than having to have a mind which would allow everybody else to say, oh, he or she is a Brahmavid. You know? Because your knowledge takes care of your mind. Right? Your knowledge takes care of your mind and blesses your mind and as it grows and blesses other people as they grow. You know? And so your mind might be, your buddhi, your knowledge may be more compassionate toward you and your phobos and your failures than another person may be looking on. Mm. See what I mean? Mm. I may not be critical to myself. I might be helpful and say, well, okay, you'll do better next time or whatever, working with the problem. Where another person from the outside might say, what the hell is her problem? You know what I'm saying? Mm. So, but what you want for your own inner space is to have a buddhi, have a mind that has that, you know, kindness toward yourself and toward others. You know, so that's the Brahmavid is the one who's the ahankara, the I recognizes I am the whole, and then tends to the parts that are lagging or hurting in this way, whether they're external or internal makes no difference. So now, for that person who is a Brahmavid, now the verse goes on, tadati shokam, that person crosses sorrow. Crosses sorrow completely. Now, does that mean that there's never a sorrowful thought in the mind? No. It doesn't mean that. It means that I am not sorrowful. I, the one who's having the sorrowful thought, am not sorrowful. And it means that the ahankar, the I notion, that lands on me, I am always the same. And if I have this thought or this thought or this mood or this emotion, those are the emotions that are there, you know. But the one who's having that emotion, those emotions, is whole and complete. That's my identity and that's my self-experience. Now, it's also true that the sorrowful thoughts are not there very much, if at all. They go away because the mind is abiding in a self which is not sorrowful. And so since the mind has a self that is not sorrowful, whose nature is ananda and whole, it has no reason to be sorrowful because the self never goes anywhere. You can't take it away from you. You can take the whole universe away, you know. You can take everything in the world away. You can strip a person completely of things in the world, but you can't do anything to the self, you know. And so I can lose this and lose this and lose this and lose this. That can be painful if I think I need this. If I think I need it to be whole, then that's painful. But myself isn't going to be changing. Myself isn't going to change at all. So what if my mind no longer identifies with these objects as being something that I need in order to be whole? What if my mind doesn't go there? Because the nature of the wholeness is the changeless self that can't be taken away. Then I can lose things and be disgruntled by it, but not unhappy. So on two levels there's that tadati, crossing of the shoka. One is that I'm not sorrow. By nature I'm not sorrow. I can't get there. It's impossible. I can't change into that. I can't morph into that because it's not the nature of my being. And the other is the mind that is capable of having sorrowful or painful thought modifications can have them, but they don't have very much bite because the source of the ananda is that self. And that mind is never away from the self. And so the mind enjoys a security, a shanti, that can withstand the world. So that's the tadati shokam. And tadati papmanam, next part of the verse, tadati papmanam. The Brahmavit crosses punya and papa, crosses over punya and papa. Punya and papa are the results of my actions that cause me to take another birth. For the Atma, for the self, there is no other birth. There never has been a birth. There never will be a birth. You're changeless, right? So there is no, from the standpoint of the conscious being that you are, you haven't been born and you'll never die. The being that you are now is it, period, timeless. And so there is no accruing of papa, punya and papa for you. That all has to do with the subtle body and the physical body taking birth after birth after birth, brought about by ignorance, by self-ignorance. Your Atma, your being, has never taken birth after birth after birth. You're the constant that is present to all of those births. And so for you, there is no punya and papa. There's no taking a better birth or a worse birth. There's not any change in the self in terms of punya or in terms of papa. So in terms of that, the Brahmavit crosses punya and papa, crosses rebirth, crosses sorrow completely. So then he says, well, how is that? He says, because that one, guha grantibhyaha vimuktaha, is somebody who's been totally released from the knots of the heart. Has anybody heard of this term, hridya grantihi, the knot of the heart? When they say, you are bound, you need to be released, liberated from the knots of the heart. The knot of the heart is the ahankara, the I notion, that born of self-ignorance, that causes you, the I, when you say, I am, so you say, I am this body. Now the I am, the I thought, which is really situated in yourself, which is Brahman, is now, because of ignorance, lassoes the body. I am the body. That's the knot. The I is identified, tied to the body. The I thought, which is located in Brahman, is then tied to the mind. It's those points of identification. Those are the knots of the heart, where you take your being to be one with the body, or one with the sense organs, one with the emotions, one with the mind. And then you become a jiva, you become a limited entity. There's no discernment. You haven't recognized the constancy of your being. So that knot, those knots of the heart, these false identifications, are vimuktaha, one is liberated, liberated from those. And such a person is amrita, becomes immortal. Amrita means, mrita means death. Amrita, free from death. Because your being never dies. It never changes. The body dies, the mind changes. Mind is dying all the time. Birth, death, with every thought. Physical body comes and goes. Right? So everything about your experience is subject to change, subject to death. There's only one thing that's not. And that's the being that you are. That's the me, your own presence. Mm. And that doesn't come and go. That's the constant. It's amrita. It's free from death. It's immortal. So the conscious me, your own presence that you are right now, this presence, if you get rid of the whole universe, it is there. The me, the self, is there. If you go back a billion years in time, me, this me, is there. Billion years forward, this me is there. Free from time. It's not an object that comes and goes. And so this changeless, invariable self is what this mind has to recognize now, rather than being identified with it. If you're identified with it, then what happens? That invariable self is taking on the qualities of the changing mind. And the changing mind is taking on the qualities of the invariable self, saying, I am the conscious being. Right? And then the conscious being takes on the mind. I am thinking, I am subject to happiness and sorrow, etc. So you become like one entity. This one entity, you need the viveka, discrimination, to recognize, to discriminate the changeless, constant presence of your being from that which is always coming and going. And then, as the teaching proceeds, now that we're done with it, but anyway, proceeds, what you recognize is that being that you are is really the being of the whole creation. And that's the Brahmavidya. Right? So, for the person who has that knowledge, then that person has gone past all sorrow and all rebirth and recognizes themselves as the changeless infinite being that we are. So let's just take a minute and then what's some sad song. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.